Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. Today on the show, it's basically going to be Ag PhD mailbag, and if you'd like to call in, I'd love to take your questions here, 844-44-AG-PHD. It's 844-442-4743, or you can send me an email, radio@agphd.com. So again, I'm live in the Morton studio today. My brother Darren is out traveling here the rest of this week, so you've just got me for the next 3 days. And my sister Janelle today is running the controls, and she is feeling festive. It was Christmas yesterday, so in the spirit of Christmas, she said, Brian, you know, if anybody wants to call in today, we've got some Ag PhD merchandise here that I'd love to give away. So if you'd like to call in and talk to Janelle and get some free Ag PhD merchandise, but only caveat, you're going to have to ask me an agronomy question, or you can ask Janelle and she'll send it over to me. But anyway, love to hear from you again. The number's 844-44-AG-PHD. Okay, got a few things to get to you to start the show today. To begin with, we're getting a lot of questions about our Ag PhD agronomy workshops this winter. Love to have you attend. They're all free. We do that as a way to say thank you to you for listening to Ag PhD Radio here and watching us on Ag PhD TV. The first workshop we've got coming up is in just a week from tomorrow, actually. It is the Ag PhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop. It's the first collegiate agronomy workshop we've ever hosted. Now, if you're not a college student, you can still attend. We're just going to go over a lot of, I would say, maybe slightly more basic stuff, things like how to read a soil test, how to control weeds, insects, and diseases in corn and soybeans. We're going to talk a little about tiling. So it's going to be a little bit more overview than some of our workshops are sometimes. But if you're looking for some basics on any of these things, and also it gives you the opportunity to ask questions, it'll be a lot of fun. It's here at the Morton Center. That is right on our Ag PhD Field Day site near Baltic, South Dakota. And if you've never been to our area before, where our Field Day site is really close to two interstate highways. We're only about 9 miles away from Interstate 90 and about maybe 4 or 5 miles away from Interstate 29. So it's pretty conveniently located. We are out in the country, though. Again, at the Ag PhD Field Day site, the Morton Center is the facility that we've got. Super nice facility we have to host these types of events right on our farm. So if you've got a college student, or you know of a college student, or you are a college student, we want you there at this event, in part because we're going to give away 20 college scholarships that day. So all you have to do to qualify for one of those college scholarships is pre-register, show up on time, or actually a little bit early. We start at 10 o'clock in the morning and stay until the end. We finish at 3, and we're going to be giving away those college scholarships during the last segment of our radio show that day at about 2:50 p.m. The other thing you're going to have to do is pay attention during the day, because we are going to have a quiz, and you've got to at least pass that quiz. Now, it's going to be pretty easy, but still. We're going to have a quiz toward the end of the day. Anyway, it'll be a lot of fun. Love to have you there. Again, that's the Ag PhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop. You can register for that or get more information at agphd.com. The other events we've got coming up this winter include, we've got an Advanced Pest Management Workshop, January 14th. On January 15th, we've got a workshop entitled What Your Fertilizer Dealer Won't Tell You. If you are a farmer and you use fertilizer, you need to be at this event. We're going to talk so much about soil fertility and the things that maybe you've been misled about in the past, you maybe haven't necessarily understood, and even some things that your fertilizer dealer may not understand about your soils. And we'd love to have you bring your soil tests. We'll have agronomy experts there, fertility experts there, who can answer your specific questions about your soil tests. Now, at a number of locations in January and February, we're going to have a workshop entitled 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Today. I would say the number one thing that I've always been asked from farmers is, how can I cut my expenses? I've been a full-time agronomist for about 28 years now, and almost every single year, that is the number one question that I've gotten ever since I was a young agronomist. So we are going to talk through a lot of different things that you may spend money on the farm and how you can reduce those expenses. Everything from fertility to drainage, seed and traits, seed treatments, financing, land costs, tillage, fuel, spraying, scouting, soil sampling, planting, harvesting, cover crops, and a whole bunch more. So it's going to be kind of wide-ranging, but it'll be a lot of fun, great pertinent information for you. And these events are going on throughout the country, starting January 16th all the way through February 25th. We have dates in a number of different states. So again, I'd encourage you to check out agphd.com for more on that. One of the last workshops we're doing of the season, just one time, again here at the Morton Center in Baltic, February 19th, will be Secrets of High Yield Fields, where we've got soil tests from some of the highest yielding farmers in the world, and it's super interesting to look at what some of these high yield farmers are doing, what their soils look like, and what your soil test may show. So we'll talk about those Secrets of High Yield Fields February 19th. Now, there is one other workshop that I wanted to mention today. It's not an Ag PhD workshop, but there is a gentleman that we've done a lot with over the years. His name is Neil Kinsey. You probably have heard him here occasionally on Ag PhD Radio. But anyway, he is going to be doing a seminar at the Morton Center on our field day site, March 5th through the 7th. Now, normally Neil charges about $1,000 if you want to come in for one of his three-day, really kind of intensive fertility seminars and soils seminars. But with this, we worked out a deal with Neil, and basically it's going to be $150 for you for 3 days, and that includes your meals for all 3 days. Plus, it includes his book. You get a copy of that with it as well. So anyway, if you want to check out more information on that, that's at agphd.com. Oh, and I'll tell you too, if you've read Neil's book or if you've heard him before, you're like, man, that guy is super smart. Well, the thing I love about him is he takes things that are kind of complicated in agriculture, puts them in simple terms that you and I can understand. So anyway, check that out as well. That's Neil Kinsey's sessions that he's doing March 5th through 7th here on our farm. Well, stay tuned. We'll get to your questions right after this.
It's tough to keep your stored soybeans in perfect condition. To maintain beans at 13% moisture, you need to run your bin fans when outside air humidity is at 70%. For 12% moisture, you need to run at 65%. For 11, 60. How can you possibly get the timing right yourself if you don't know the humidity at your bin site and aren't there to switch on your fans? The Steps GMS Temperature Humidity Switch is your low-cost solution. For more information, visit us at stepsgms.com.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. If you'd like to call in during our show today, we'll give you some free Ag PhD merchandise. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. It's 844-442-4743. Or you can send me an email if you would like me to answer any of your questions coming up in the Ag PhD mailbag time shortly. The email address here is radio at agphd.com. Okay. before we get to your questions, one of the other big things that is going on right now on a lot of farms is people are trying to figure out how much should I be prepaying. So hopefully you've already worked things out with your tax accountant, but things are a little bit different this year with different income tax rates, just a few changes in the tax law. So make sure you're up to speed on all those things. Now, the great thing, as farmers, we still have the advantage of being able to use cash accounting. So that allows us to reduce our income this year. And for those of you listening who are not farmers, don't think that farmers get out of tax. They don't. All it is, in effect, is delaying the tax bill. But like I always tell people, think about why the government would want farmers to be able to delay their tax bill. Well, first of all, farming is a very, very challenging profession. We're so subject to all these things that we don't control, like the grain markets, all the farm news around the world and the politics, and then certainly the weather. So the government either needs to allow income averaging or this cash accounting. Well, actually, they do both. But the nice thing with the cash accounting deal is if there are farm inputs like crop protection, seed, fertilizer that don't have to be depreciated, they can simply be expensed, you can lower your tax bill now. But anyway, the reason why the government allows that, in addition to understanding our industry is super crazy challenging, the reason why they allow that is because when any of us farmers want to reduce our income this year, what do we have to do? We have to spend cash. And cash is what makes the economy go. So the government just figures, okay, that cash is going to turn a few times in the economy. That's a good thing. Well, it's a little challenging now because, number one, there are some farmers, many farmers across the U.S., who may receive government checks for soybeans because you know about our whole issue going on with China right now. So you may get a check one of the last couple days of the year. Okay, that could make it challenging when you thought, oh, this is exactly how my tax situation is going to turn out. And then all of a sudden, you get an extra check in there. So make sure you're talking to your tax accountant about that, number one. Number two, with prepay, what my dad always told me is, Brian, there are really a couple ways that you can make money in the farm. And you need to do both if you're going to survive. Number one, you got to make it with your back. In other words, you got to make it with hard work. Now, it doesn't have to necessarily be manual labor, but what he meant is you've got to put in the hours, you got to work really hard. The other side of it is you have to work smart. He used to term this as running the pencil. So he said, you know, whether it's with taxes or interest rates or just how you buy things, when you buy things, all those. That's all about working smart. So if you can lower your tax bill each year and continue to push that off for a long period of time, then you have that money to use in your operation, and the opportunity cost for money is still pretty great. So just a couple of things that I wanted to make mention, though. There are a lot of farmers that I talk to about prepay every year, and they say, oh, yeah, I wrote a check to my, whatever, crop protection dealer, seed dealer before the end of the year. And occasionally I will ask them, what kind of receipt did they give you? Well, they just gave me a payment receipt. Okay, just understand that for the IRS, a payment receipt only is not good enough. You have to have three other things. Number one, you need specific products listed. Number two, you have to have exact quantities listed. And number three, you have to have specific prices. Now, work this out with your seed dealer, your crop protection dealer. Most of them will allow you to make changes later on. So in effect, you've bought something now. You could return it later, swap it out for something else. For most retailers, that's no big deal, but just make sure you talk about that in advance. But again, make sure that you've got this information for the IRS. I've worked with a few farmers who've had to go through audits, and mostly it went pretty good because these guys were in good shape. But I'm just trying to say the IRS is very specific on this. They need specific products, quantities, and prices on your invoice. Okay. So it can certainly be a separate invoice from the payment invoice, but just make sure you've got that. Talk to your retailer about that. Make sure you're in good shape. And do it now while you're thinking about it, because you don't want to have to worry about this a few months or even a couple years down the road if and when you ever do get audited. Oh, one last thing that I will say, because occasionally I will talk to farmers after January 1, and they'll say, well, I don't know, I still need to do something on taxes. I wonder if I can get that done with my retailer yet. No, you can't. December 31 is the date. That's coming up on Monday. So you got to get going on this. And I know we're all busy around the holidays and we got family over and everything else, but you got to get to it. December 31 is the date if that's the end of your fiscal year. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag now.
It's the mailbag!
All right, to finish up the show, there was one day last week, I think it was the end of last week, Darren threw out a question, Steve from Illinois, and I said, Darren, you didn't give me a lot of time to answer that. It was in like the last minute of the show. So I wanted to revisit that question today and just cover that in a little bit more detail for you. Anyway, Steve's question was, I have several soil tests from this fall that show my boron at less than one part per million in a soil test, and I'm in a corn-soybean rotation. Is foliar spraying the easiest way to apply boron? Well, Steve, there are many different ways that you can apply boron. So let me just first say a couple of things about boron. Number one, it's very, very important in crops around that flowering kind of timing. So you think about when that occurs in corn and soybeans and wheat, for example, that's when you've got to have real good levels of boron. Now, what I would encourage you to do too, for any farmer, is you can pull up the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. This is an app I use all the time, and we talk about it quite often here on the show because it's super important. And by the way, this isn't just our information. We worked in conjunction with the International Plant Nutrition Institute to get you the best information out there. So for example, I'll punch in corn, and let's say my yield goal for next year is 250. I go to boron, and what I need for boron, the grain alone is going to take 0.6 pounds. The Stover only needs a little bit. The Stover takes 0.06 pounds. So I've got a grand total of 0.66 pounds that my plant has to pull in for boron this coming year. Now, here's my first question for you. Have you applied boron in the last 5 years? My second question is, if you have, how much boron have you been putting on? Have you been putting on enough boron? And third, do you know that boron is leachable? Now, it's not nearly as leachable as nitrate, okay? If you've got a real heavy soil, it'll probably stay around for a few years. It's not that big a deal. But it's not like phosphorus, or even for that matter, like potassium, nutrients that, for the most part, pretty well stay put, especially phosphorus. That hardly ever moves. So boron is leachable to some degree. Anyway, if let's say that I had really light soil, let's say I had a 3 cation exchange capacity, super sandy, and I get 50 inches of rain. If I put boron out there in the fall or even in the spring, will that last all the way till the end of the growing season? I seriously doubt it. Now, in my situation where I've got cation exchange capacity 20, maybe 25, so super heavy ground, and I only get normally 20, 22 inches of total annual precip, if I put some boron out there in the fall or in the spring, is it going to stay till the end of the season? I'd be absolutely shocked if it didn't. So in my situation, I don't mind putting it in the soil because dry is a lot cheaper than liquid. Now, if you want to go liquid and you want to spray it foliar, you absolutely can. But this is Steve from Illinois. I don't know where he's at in Illinois. I don't know what his soil type is, but a lot of soils in Illinois are relatively heavy. And yes, they get more rain than we do here in South Dakota, but still, it's not a crazy, ridiculous amount of rain. So my suggestion, Steve, if you've never done a lot of work with boron, is try 2, 3, 4 different ways to put it on. You can put some on dry in the fall. You could do dry in the spring. You can do liquid in the spring if you wanted to. Spray it out with your herbicide. We've done that. You can spray a little bit foliar early on. You can spray it a little bit later. Try some different timings. It's just when you go foliar, you have to run low rates. And again, liquid is going to be much more expensive than dry. But if you need a quick boost, you absolutely can do that quite well with foliar. A lot of people are doing it. All right, stay tuned. We've got more of your questions coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutek's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutek's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutek's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Getting back to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. Again, if you've got a question, just email me radio@agphd.com. All right, next one, it's just a couple of comments here from a couple of our listeners. One is from Stan, the other is from James. Stan said, please tell Brian he did an excellent job this week explaining misunderstandings regarding Roundup. Thank you, Stan. And James said, amen on what you said about Roundup. Quite honestly, I don't even remember exactly what I said about Roundup, but I will just tell you this. You know, when you take a look at Roundup, and then you look at a lot of other substances we have in our society today, you got to take everything into consideration a little bit. And what you hear in the media and everything else really gets amped up to the degree that are facts even involved anymore? You know, it's one of the frustrating things in our society today where almost anybody has a voice, and you can have a really big voice. I look at some of these athletes that have 100 million followers on Twitter and Facebook and all these things, and they can say whatever they want, and all of a sudden they really have a big impact on public perception. Okay, nothing against anybody saying, you know, whatever they want in our country necessarily, because we do have freedom of speech and that's all fine. But when it comes to the courts and what we start talking about there, then we really have to look at facts and we have to look at science. And for example, and let me just say this. With Roundup, I am not a scientist and I'm not a lawyer. And so I realize for some people I'm going to get in trouble by just saying this, but simply look at the label on Roundup. Look at the tests that are out there. Look at what the LD50 is. The LD50, I'm just off the top of my head, it's something like 5,600 milligrams per kilogram. And if you look at caffeine, it's like 200 milligrams per kilogram. In other words, it would take 28 times more Roundup to kill you, or I shouldn't say Roundup, more glyphosate to kill you than it would caffeine. Okay, 28 times more. Also, glyphosate has never been shown to cause cancer in anyone, ever. So when you look at all these actual scientific studies run, it's not causing cancer. The LD50 means it would take 28 times more glyphosate to kill you than caffeine, and many Americans and Canadians readily drink caffeine. You know, all I'm saying here is let's start looking at the facts. I don't care if we're talking about Roundup or really anything out there in society. We got to look at the facts rather than just whatever public perception is. So anyway, it's very often misleading. That's all I'm getting at. And also, I would just say the dose makes the poison. I mean, anything will kill you. Water will kill you. I'm trying to think of what this was. I had this down. Here, actually, I'll pull this up for you. I had this down. I was doing a couple meetings the other day, and I just put down, all right, you know, let's talk a little about pesticide safety and all this kind of thing. And of course, everybody thinks pesticides are super dangerous. And I'm just going, well, you know, again, the dose makes the poison. Look at gasoline, for example. I mean, how many of you filled up your pickup on the way here to this meeting today? Were you wearing personal protective equipment? And people just laugh. They're like, what? Oh, well, you're not going to wear personal protective equipment pumping gas. And I go, well, there's benzene in that gasoline. That's a proven cancer causer. A proven cancer causer is in the gasoline that you're pumping. And now, by the way, right after you pump that gas, did you run into the convenience store, grab some food, and then you ate food with the same hand you just pumped gas with? I mean, you just consume benzene that is a proven cancer causer. And a lot of people just don't even think about that. That's what I'm trying to say. But anyway, just as an example here, water will kill you too. Did you know the LD50 for water is about 90,000 milligrams per kilogram of body weight? So for me as a 200-pound person, it would take about 18 pounds of water. If I just sat down and drank 18 pounds of water, LD50 means you got a 50% chance of dying. So I'd have a 50% chance of dying if I ingested 18 pounds of water right now. I'm sorry, I realize it's kind of a morbid thought, but all I'm trying to say again is the dose makes the poison, and we've got to look at science when we're making decisions rather than just how we feel about things. Next one here, I got a couple questions. Kyle from Alberta and William from Ireland, both asking about a product, Decomp. We've talked about this. It's 65 different biologicals. It is labeled here in the United States. At this time, I don't believe it's labeled in either Ireland or Canada, but I'll have somebody check into that for you and get back to you on that, guys. With this Decomp product, basically the whole point is that it can break down residue faster. A lot of people are talking about that, especially in our area of the country and as we go north into Canada where the weather is cold. And then the other thing is turning manure into compost much more quickly. That has gotten to be a real big deal here in the last few years as well, just because compost is way more environmentally friendly than manure. Speaking of manure, I got a question here from Colin, and he is in Wisconsin. He asked this. He said, I was listening to your talk show last week, and you were discussing manure. I have two poultry barns and recently got the manure tested. I attached the results. My concern is the level of sodium. My soil is sandy and I have irrigation. I spread as many acres as I can every winter and figure I'm putting on approximately 7 to 8 tons per acre. Can you tell me two things? One, what's the safe level of sodium I can apply? And two, on the acres I spread the manure, do you feel it's necessary to put in-furrow pop-up fertilizer since my P and K is already so high, even though it is only spread on top? I plant corn and soybeans in a year-by-year rotation. Corn will be planted this spring. Thanks for any advice you can give me on this, and I really enjoy listening to your show. All right, Colin, number one. When I look at your manure tests here, I see for every ton, it says you're getting, you're getting 15 pounds of sodium per ton, 15 pounds per ton. And if you tell me you're putting on 7 to 8 tons That's a lot. That's around 100 pounds of sodium that you're putting out there. Yeah, that's really pushing it. What I'd love to see is a soil test now. Send me a couple, three of your soil tests, if you wouldn't mind. Again, it's radio@agphd.com. You can send those over. I'll take a look at your soil tests, and then I can give you a little bit better answer as to say, all right, currently, here's where I'm sitting at. Can I apply more? Now, my next thing is, and where my big concern here is, in addition to this sodium deal, is how much N, P, and K you're getting out there too, especially the nitrogen and the phosphate. According to this test, it says you're getting about 58 pounds of nitrogen for every ton. Okay, well, if I take 58 times 7, and I'm a little slow at math, so it's probably around 400, something like that. Let's see, 58 times 7. That gives me 406 pounds of nitrogen. And if I take 38 pounds of phosphate times 7 tons, that gives me 266 pounds of phosphate. Now, if you're raising 350 bushel corn, then you're probably right in the ballpark. But if you're raising 200 bushel corn, then you're really building up your soil levels. So I'd be super interested to find out what are your soil levels and are we getting real excessive? The other thing I'd be interested in, if you've been doing this for a while, is how are your micronutrient levels in your soils? If you've been putting on lots of N, P, and K, and maybe your micronutrients are lacking a little bit, that could be causing some issues for you as well. And maybe you don't need any more N, P, and K for a couple of years. You could just spend a few dollars on a few micros, or even one or two micros, and really bump your yield. One other thing that I will say too, a lot of times, rather than talking about sodium necessarily, we do talk about total pounds of salt. So for example, I just pulled up one of my manure tests, and this was liquid manure, but still. On my manure test, and I have Midwest Labs test this every year, they just put right in the bottom, total manure salts should not exceed 500 pounds per acre. So when it's a salt, it's leachable. When it's sodium, it's not. Sodium is not leachable unless we can turn that into a salt. But there is a fair amount of sulfur, for example, in your manure. So I'm sure a lot of the sulfur is combining with the sodium to form sodium sulfate. That's a salt, and that would be leachable. So again, I'd be real interested in seeing what your soil tests look like. When you talk about light soil and irrigation, hopefully you're flushing enough stuff out. On your final question, should you put in some pop-up fertilizer? What we have often found is even in high P and K fields, pop-up fertilizer can pay. I'm just going to run a real low rate of a low salt product. Usually it speeds emergence a little bit and we get a little bit drier corn in the fall. It's no real huge deal when you're in a high P and K field, but nevertheless, I'd probably still continue to use a little bit. Just keep that rate really low and again, go low salt. All right, we'll get to more of your questions and phone calls right after this here on Ag PhD Radio.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System.
The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, live in the Morton studio. If you'd like to call in, it's 844-44-AG-PHD or send me an email, radio@agphd.com. Going to jump to the phone lines now. We got Tim calling in from Arkansas. Hey, Tim, how are you?
Hey, just fine. You doing all right?
Yeah, doing good. Did you have a good Christmas?
Oh, outstanding.
Excellent.
Real good.
Excellent. So here, got some questions about BT in sweet corn.
Yeah, trying to get ready for the next season, and I've been growing it for about 4 years now.
Yep.
And the first 3 years, was using that Roundup Ready corn, and had real good worm control.
Okay.
Well, last year we had a little bit of a drought in this area, and had a little bit of worm pressure, and so started doing some research. And it said, you know, sometimes that situation you need to spray with some BT.
Okay.
You know, to kind of help the corn along a little bit. And so I, you know, kind of looked at, done a little bit of research online, talked to the extension agent about it, and
yep.
And everybody kind of recommended to go with BT on it.
Okay.
Well, I went in to order it, and sweet corn's not on the label. How do I handle that?
Okay. Well, you got a few things here. First of all, you mentioned Roundup corn at one point, and just because it's BT doesn't necessarily mean that it's Roundup corn. Is this just a straight BT corn? Is that what we're talking about here?
Oh, no. It's a triple stack.
Okay.
With the Roundup Ready and the below ground and above ground protection.
Sweet corn.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the Obsession 2.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Just wanted to make sure that that I knew what you're talking about here. All right. And then you wanted to spray some additional insecticide, and you're telling me that insecticide is a BT, but it's not labeled for sweet corn, and you're wondering what to do. So do I have that right?
Right.
Okay.
Dipple Dust is what I'm looking at.
What was the name of it?
Dipple Dust.
Okay.
Or dipel. Some people pronounce it dipel dust.
Okay. Dipel is usually the product that we end up talking to people about. And, yeah, that's a good question. If we're talking about sweet corn, I guess I just assumed it was labeled. Okay, so one of the labels I'm looking at right now, so there's Dipel 10G Biological Insecticide, and right on there it's got sweet corn. So I would just try to find another BT that is labeled. But as we say that, if you're having problems with certain worms dying, number one, we got to make sure we've got the right kind of worm that's going to die from the BT. Number two, do we have resistance? If it is the type of worm that should die from that BT, do we have resistance? So what I'm getting at here is if you throw more BT over the top, you're probably still not going to kill that insect. And if that's the case, then you'd have to go with something else, maybe like a pyrethroid. The pyrethroids are super cheap. They only cost about $2 an acre. And the pyrethroid chemistry comes from the chrysanthemum flower. So it is one of the safer ones that you could get out there. So those are the things that I would take a look at. Do you know what was it, corn borer that you were after? What bug specifically?
No, it was actually the earworm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yep. And yeah, a lot of times, and it just depends on the BT that you're getting. So for example, like Dipel, when I pull up sweet corn and I take a look at that, just on the one I've got, and I'm not saying all Dipel or anything else because I haven't looked at every one of the labels, but the one I'm looking at is just labeled for fall armyworm, European corn borer, and southwestern corn borer. So you got to make sure that you get the right insecticide that's going to kill the bug that you're after, and that BT that you're using, the BT corn you're using. Yeah, I mean, if it doesn't kill earworms, then I can understand certainly why you're trying to find an insecticide now.
Right. That one you mentioned ago was like a Dipel 10G?
Yep, Dipel.
Dipel. Okay.
Yeah, they have granule, they have liquid. Dipel's been around for lots and lots of years. And like I tell people all the time, it's the same basic thing as the BT that they're going to put inside the corn. So it's kind of interesting. A lot of people think, oh, you know, this is just for inside the corn. No, there actually is the BT, Bacillus thuringiensis insecticide. The brand name is Dipel, and yeah, you mentioned one of the other ones. I don't know all the ones that are out there, certainly, but there are a lot of these BTs that are actually approved for organic use, even. So it's kind of interesting that it's organic approves it when you can spray it over the top, but they don't approve it when it's in the corn.
Yeah, I've had that conversation.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for the call, Tim. Appreciate it.
You too, man. Bye.
Yep, see ya. All right, let's get to the next question here. This one comes in from John, and I was talking about the Ag PhD Collegiate Workshop earlier in the show. He said, "Hi, it's very exciting to hear about your collegiate workshop. Having attended your other workshops, I'm sure this will be a great opportunity. I am currently in college in my fourth year, going for diesel tech. After completing my agronomy degree, and I'm sure some of my college friends that have already graduated would love to attend, but they were just wondering if they can. They are all roughly college age, but they may or may not be in school anymore. So first of all, John, yes, anybody can attend. I don't care if you're 14 years old or 84 years old or 22 years old. Doesn't make any difference. So anybody can attend our Collegiate Agronomy Workshop that's coming up Thursday, January 3rd, here at the Morton Center at Baltic, right on our farm, right on our Ag PhD Field Day site. Just go to agphd.com to learn more about that. But the ones who will qualify for our drawing at the end of the day for 20 college scholarships have to be current college students. And when they come, they're going to have to actually show their college ID to be eligible for that. So anybody can attend. Only current college students are the ones who are eligible for the college scholarships we're going to give away that day. All right. Let's see. I've got a couple questions here about Bermuda grass, and the one comes from Andy. He sent me some soil tests, and he said, I am pretty sure drainage is my issue, but I just wanted to know, should I correct my nitrogen and phosphorus deficiencies in the spring? In terms of my soil pH, what do I do about it? It's heavy ground. I can't really afford right now to put tile in all over this field with elemental sulfur costing $490 a ton in my area. I would be able to put out about 300 pounds per acre over 45 acres. Do you think that'll be enough to bring the pH down, or is that just a waste of money? All right, so Andy, when I look at your tests, and yes, the first thing I do notice is you've got a lot of higher pH. Most of his tests are showing me 7.8, 7.9 for pH. He's got one spot of 6.6, so that one's good. But the other ones, it's pretty high. Now, here's the problem. His cation exchange capacity is 35 to 40, so it's really high. That's a challenge. And so anytime you're going to make any adjustment on pH, if it was low or if it was high, it's going to take a lot of adjustment when I've got a super heavy soil, just because there are so many binding sites in that soil. So if it was low, I'd have to have a lot of lime. If it's high, I'd have to have a fair amount of elemental sulfur. But anyway, he said I may have a drainage issue. Now, when I look at this, I see his sodium levels are pretty high. His soluble salt levels are not super high, but they're getting they're getting a little high. I see there's some boron on there. You know, some of these leachables are like even sulfur. I've got some better levels. So it doesn't look to me like it's super terrible for drainage, but if you think drainage is your issue, I'll just say this. You have to take care of the drainage issue first before you start working on any elemental sulfur stuff. The reason why is because elemental sulfur needs bacteria to break down and convert and end up lowering your pH. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen the way it should if you have poor drainage. What will happen is your soil will end up smelling like rotten eggs when you get done, and you can do more harm than good when you have poor drainage and you put elemental sulfur on. Here's the other thing. We can fix any soil. Could I go in and fix this? Yeah, I could throw a bunch of phosphorus out to fix his low phosphorus level. Could I go out and get his pH down within a couple, 3 years by putting some drainage in, elemental sulfur? I can do all those things. I could also fix his low zinc, his low manganese. You know, yes, we can do that. But the thing is, and what he mentioned there is, can I afford it? That's going to be the real challenge with this. I don't know. When you're just raising Bermuda grass, it gets pretty difficult. Well, we'll talk more about that and get to the rest of your questions coming up here on Ag PhD Radio.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Welcome back. I hope you've enjoyed the show today. If you've got any questions for me, radio@agphd.com. Before the break, we were talking about Andy's question raising Bermuda grass, and he's down in Texas. So, like I was saying earlier, the challenge in a lot of situations is, how much are you going to spend? What's the payoff look like? Because we can fix soils. We absolutely can. We can make things great if we want to. But how much is that going to pay? So I look at things, let's just say on my farm. And we're in southeast South Dakota. Farmland's worth a lot right now. And, you know, even though commodity prices are down, if I own the ground and I figure, you know what, someday maybe my kids will have it, whatever, I'm thinking real long term here. I don't mind investing the money in tile. I don't mind investing the money in certain fertility products to build that soil up. I don't have a big issue with that. But, you know, in Andy's case, I don't know what all that looks like for him, and I don't know what his financial situation is or anything else, but I will just tell you, when I'm looking at phosphorus levels, P1, or I should say Olsen phosphorus levels, because we're looking at high soil pH, Olsen phosphorus levels of 14 to 23, something like that, parts per million, I mean, it's certainly not high. And the problem here is, he's got really high cation exchange capacity numbers. So it takes a lot to lower that pH down. And when he would lower the pH down, certainly you'll have more availability of certain nutrients, the micros, phosphorus, that type of thing. We don't love 7.8 and 7.9 pHs. What we do love is 6.3 to 6.8 for most crops. So he's talking about Bermuda. It will survive in that ground. You know, if I look at, okay, I've got Bermuda grass and I am renting the ground, or maybe I own the ground, but I'm still not in fantastic financial shape. What would I do in a situation like this? The potassium's down around 2.3 to 2.9% base saturation K. There's a fair amount of parts per million out there, 270 all the way to 427 parts per million. But again, super heavy ground. So what would I do? Well, first of all, I may consider, and this is going to seem a little strange, but I may consider doing something with my phosphorus, like injecting some phosphorus with, let's say, a Coulter, maybe once every 4 or 5 years, something like that. So I'm going to disturb the soil. I'm going to wreck a few plants, but I could inject that phosphorus and get it down where I actually need it. Now, if you want to go out and broadcast spread phosphorus, you can. It just doesn't move into the soil very well, especially when it's that heavy. And you know, with phosphorus, we want it down in the ground where our roots are. That's my number one concern in terms of a nutrient not moving down well in soil. My number two concern is zinc, and his zinc levels are also super low. So if I was going to inject some phosphorus, I'd inject some zinc along with it, and I may very well consider that. I might throw a little bit of potassium out there, but you know, I'm just not going to get too terribly carried away because he says he's got potential drainage issues. I don't know. It's a real challenging situation. So what I'd do is I'd be just basically trying to get by. If we're talking dollars and cents in the short term, in the long term, yes, if you want to put some tile out there, get the drainage fixed, then you start using some elemental sulfur, then you start, you know, getting more phosphorus and zinc and even a little bit more K, you should be in good shape for the long term. Okay, so I said earlier I had some other Bermuda grass questions. I actually have two more here. This one is from Brent. He says, I farm coastal Bermuda hay and pasture land in extreme southeast Oklahoma. Like a lot of places in the south, we generally receive a lot of rain, 50 plus inches. The problem is it comes at the wrong time of the year, and our winters can be beyond just a little saturated. I've heard you talk about how bad waterlogged soils are for bacteria and fungi and overall soil health. There's only one farm in my area that has tile that I'm aware of, and as flat as the ground is, it doesn't even work when we receive 30 inches in a 90-day period. So my question is this. I realize drainage and tile work would help a lot if applicable. What would a guy do with soils after they've been extremely waterlogged to help rejuvenate those soils for the next growing season? Should I aerate them? Should I use some organic fertilizer such as poultry litter or nitrogen? Anything else? We've received over 30 inches in the past 90 days this fall. To say that soils are saturated would be an understatement. All right, so Brent, I don't care what crop it is you're raising. When you have waterlogged soils, absolutely, you're going to kill a bunch of that beneficial soil life. That's our number one concern. That's why we do want to have good drainage out there. And with tile, so you mentioned like flat ground and getting rid of 30 inches in a 90-day period. You can do that, but it's going to be a pretty costly tile system to get that done, depending on how heavy the soil is and how flat it is. But anyway, where I'm going with this is, okay, let's just say for whatever reason, our soil's got waterlogged. How do I get them back into shape? Yes, ideally, you mentioned, you said organic fertilizer such as poultry litter. If I can get some type of manure and or compost out there, that's the best thing that I can possibly do. Also, if I start looking at nitrogen, for example, like with soybeans, you would want to double inoculate. You would want to throw some additional nitrogen out there because your soil just isn't going to be able to have beneficial bacteria living very well. You're not going to maybe release as much out of the organic matter as you normally do. So, yeah, anything like that, that would be great. All right, let's get to the phone lines here. We've got Bill calling in from North Carolina. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm great. Good afternoon. Hey, I have just recently developed an interest in agriculture, and I was wondering if you might be able to direct me to some starter resources. Well, my specific interests are forestry and swine. Do you know of something like that?
Not off the top of my head when we start talking about forestry and swine, but I'll tell you what, Bill, I'm just basically going to put you back on hold here, and I'll have you give our call screener your information, and we will get back in touch with you. But forestry and swine, yeah, I'm sure there are some decent resources out there, and for that matter, even for any of our listeners, if you're hearing this and you've got any suggestions for Bill, just please email me, or you can even call us here sometime over the next couple of days, and we'll shoot that information over to Bill. So yeah, Bill, that's a great question. I know there's great information out there, but forestry and swine are not our top two things we are usually talking about here on the show.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Bill. All right, I want to jump back to the last Bermuda grass question that I had here. This one comes from Kirk down in Texas, and he says he is planning to close a sale on some farmland that's got Bermuda grass on there, and he asks, should I work on getting the base saturation of K up to 5% on a Bermuda hay meadow? I hear Bermuda will take more than it needs of K. I will be selling the hay, so I don't want to give away unnecessary K. I plan on getting the soil tested and incorporating lime and fertilizer before spraying. So here's the thing, Kirk. Yeah, we would really want to look at that soil test and just see. If you own the ground, kind of like I was talking about with these last questions I had on Bermuda grass, if you own the ground, you're going to look at things a little bit differently than if you're renting or you're looking at this for the short term. So yeah, if you own the ground, ideally, would I love to get that base saturation K up to 5%? I absolutely would. Now, you're concerned about when you sell that hay, are you going to give away unnecessary K? No. Take a look at, again, you can look at our AgPHD fertilizer removal app, but it's a little challenging when you start talking about K and any type of hay. If, let's say you cut grass, then how much K is left in that grass at that point? It all depends on the stage that you've cut it. And then after you cut it, it depends on how long is it going to be till you get that off the field. Let's say that you cut it, and then let's say that you get quite a bit of rain on it over the course of the next week. Well, there's a bunch of that potassium that actually can flush out of that grass. So that's the bigger factor. If you, just because, let's say you had 3% base saturation K or you had 8% base saturation K in the ground, that doesn't necessarily mean that your grass is going to be that much more loaded with potassium. Yeah, it might have a little bit more. But the big thing is you should be able to produce more overall yield. And what we're always trying to figure out on the farm is where are our yield limiting factors at? So in other words, do I need more K? Do I need more of certain micronutrients? And that's where we kind of have to do a little bit of trial and error and certainly take a look at soil tests. With any type of grass, the number one factor is almost always nitrogen. We're looking at, do I need more nitrogen or do I not? And along with that, we're looking at sulfur. So I've had three Bermuda grass questions in a row here, and you know, great questions about P and K and soil fertility overall, pH, all these things. That's awesome. But ultimately, what I'm going to look at in the short term is my nitrogen level and my sulfate level as I progress throughout the season. And especially if you're in an area that gets lots of rain, just understand if I put too much nitrogen and sulfur on, I can lose that. So I'm going to have to spoon feed it a little bit as I go in these heavy rainfall areas. All right, well, I hope you've enjoyed our show for today. Really appreciate you listening. Just want to, before we run, say thanks to our production staff. Thanks to everyone who called or wrote in with questions. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.